Thank you very much for the introduction. So just, how is the mic level at the back? My voice is projecting? Okay. Okay, so it's a great pleasure to be here. I'm thankful to the organizers, to take part in this workshop and also to be here for the entire semester. So what I'll be speaking about is a joint work with Grigoris Paouris. I've given two talks on this topic already, and each time I give a talk, I'm given slightly less time to talk about it. But on the other hand, the project has been evolving, so I have slightly more material, so I hope I will fit everything in. Okay, so there will be two parts of the talk. The first part will just be recalling some known results. Okay, so these are several inequalities of, say, isoparametric type, where we're looking at all convex bodies of a given volume, say fixed volume 1, and we're looking at some other measure of size of k, say associated to a certain set, and we're looking for the minimizer. So I'll start by just recalling several such results about random polytopes generated by sampling points in a convex body, random zonotopes, and then this third one, it fits naturally here, but it's not necessarily a random set, but it fits in this spot and also with the theme of the talk. So that will be the introduction, and then I'll talk about a generalization. So a way to look at these results, say more from a functional analytic perspective, and say how to say understand say how these things are related. Okay, so the first one, K throughout will be a convex body, volume 1, or maybe a more general set later. If I say X is a random vector distributed uniformly in K, that just means according to the volume distribution, the volume restricted to K. We take capital N, independent copies of X, and we form their convex hull. So conf here will be the convex hull. And so the first result is about the expected volume of such an object as a function of the convex body. So this is a result due to Gromer from 1974. So we fix our convex body K. We denote the Euclidean ball in Rn of volume 1 by B2n with the bar above. And then we look at the expected volume of this random polytope. Okay, and so the result is that, well, this expected volume is minimized for the ball. Okay, and the equality condition is for the ball or for ellipsoids. So equality holds only for ellipsoids. And the same thing is true if I take the absolute convex hull, and not just the convex hull, so I take plus and minus the xi. Okay, and there are various generalizations of this result in various directions. So there's a result due to Pfeiffer, which is not about arbitrary polytopes, but about random simplices. So you can replace the set K not by a convex body, but by a compact set, say with non-empty interior. There's results about the types of functions you can put here. So Gromer actually proved this for pth moments with p bigger than or equal to 1. Giannopoulos and Solomides improved this with putting any increasing function, and in particular the nth root, so they had an application for this. Okay, so there are various ways to generalize this. So that's the first example. So the second example is generating random convex bodies using a different operation, so using Minkowski addition. So just a reminder, a zonotope is just a Minkowski sum of line segments. So the xi here are an Rn, and I'm using the interval notation just to mean the line segment joining minus xi and xi. Okay, so some basic examples are here, and then there's a theorem about the volume of random zonotopes due to Bourguin, Mayer, Milman, and Pajor from 1988. And so the same setup as before, except this time we're looking at the expected volume of the zonotope into the pth power. Okay, same conclusion. This function is minimized when we plug in the ball. Okay, so those are the first two. They deal with expected volume of random convex sets. And then the third example in my introduction will be about, well, a non-random convex set, but before getting there, I have to just introduce some notation. So just some standard notation for the support function. So if C is a convex body, HC will be its support function. So in a given direction Y, say the vertical direction, this is just the distance from the origin to a supporting hyperplane. Okay, so that's standard notation, and we're going to define a body. So associated to a convex body K, we define a new convex body, and how we do it is we give it support functions. So these are LP centroid bodies. So now we start with not necessarily a convex body, but a compact set with volume 1, and we're assuming it's star-shaped. So star-shaped just means that smaller positive homosets of K are contained in K, and also the radial function is positive and continuous. Okay, and so for P bigger than 1, the LP centroid body, it's defined by its support function. So we're giving the support function here by this formula. So if you look at Y on the sphere, you look at this functional acting on K and just take the LP norm. Okay, and so this was introduced by Lutwak, Yang, and Zhang, but not using this normalization. So this normalization is convenient for what I'm going to talk about. So just to emphasize, I'm always assuming volume 1 here. Okay, so that's the, say, formula. That's how to define it. Just a few words on terminology. So the centroid body is a classical concept. So when P equals 1, these are just the centroid bodies. And so let's take the unit square here. Again, volume 1. And, okay, so it's defined just by this formula, and so it's the centroid of what? Well, if we fix the direction, so say y is the diagonal direction, we look at y perp, so this cuts k into two pieces, and then what are the coordinates of the centroid of this piece? Well, in y perp, it will just be 0, and y will be this number. So supporting hyperplane to the body is just this value, and we do this in each direction. So the centroid body is just the collection of all centroids of halves of K when you slice K by hyperplane through the origin. Okay, so that's P equals 1. When P equals 2, this actually defines the Euclidean norm. So in this case, it's just the Euclidean ball. And then when P grows to infinity, of course, the P norm tends to the infinity norm. So then this is just the support function of K. Okay, and so then inequality proved by Lutwak, Yang, and Zhang is that for star-shaped bodies, the volume of the centroid body of K is always bigger than the volume of the centroid body of the ball. Okay, and the analogous equality conditions. Okay, so that's my introduction. Those are the three inequalities. So we talked about polytopes generated by random vertices, random bodies using Minkowski addition, and then centroid bodies. Okay, so we got interested in, say, looking at this more from, say, a functional analytic viewpoint. So just some notation, we're going to take the standard unit vector basis in R capital N. Now fixed for given points, vectors in R small n, consider the following linear operator, just mapping the standard unit vector basis, the EI, to the XIs. So as a matrix, this guy just has the XIs as columns. Okay, so if I denote the cross polytope in R capital N just by B1N, and, well, B infinity N is the cube, then what? Then TN applied to the cross polytope, I mean, the columns are just the XIs. So when I apply this to the I unit vector, I just get the I columns, so the convex hull. And when I apply this to the cube, I mean, just by definition, it's sums of this form, where the bi's are in the cube, and this is just the zonotope. Okay, so I'm writing the symmetric case here. So Gromer's result was about the convex hull. I'm writing the symmetric case here to be a little bit suggestive. So our say, initial motivation for this research was what happens when T is a random operator, the columns are sampled in a convex body, what happens when you apply such a random operator to different sets? Okay, and BPN is kind of the obvious thing here if you're considering this symmetric case. Okay, and so, this ties in the first two, and then the third one will take, say, an extra couple steps. So before that, though, let's just I'll state the main results. So the theorem says that if we have any bounded measurable set in Rn normalized to have volume 1, given vectors x, we take T to be the random matrix with the xi's as the columns. You take any compact convex set in R capital N, you apply T to that set C, And then you look at its expected volume. So we're averaging over capital N copies of K here. So the analogous thing, but we're applying the random matrix to any compact convex set. I'm not necessarily assuming non-empty interior, so this volume is a little bit ambiguous, but T has full rank with probability 1, so I mean the dimension is clear here. Okay, so then the analogous statement holds. This is minimized for the Euclidean ball, and the equality condition is the same, except now in the class of not convex bodies, but bounded Borel measurable sets, we can allow, well, it should be equal to an ellipsoid almost everywhere. Okay, so this is clear how it includes the first two cases. So if I plug in the cross polytope, of course, and the cube, it gets the first two, and then the third one. It's not an immediate consequence of this, but it's a consequence of a corollary of this theorem. So what does the corollary say? So, right. So the last theorem, we had this random matrix, we applied it to one set, and we looked at its volume. So suppose now, instead of having one set, we had a family of sets, so Cn in increasing dimension. Okay, and then we also have a family of linear operators, each of each size. So here we're taking independent random vectors, x1 up xn, so an infinite sequence in K, the corresponding thing in the ball. Tn is this matrix with the xi as columns for each capital N. Same thing with the yi's sampled in the ball. And then we assume now we have a family of compact convex sets in R capital N for n equal 1, 2, up to infinity. So there are two assumptions. We assume that all of these are uniformly bounded. Okay, so Sn of Cn is in R b2n. And in the Hausdorff metric, we have convergence of these things. Okay, so Ck is the limit of Tn, Cn, and the same thing for the ball. Okay, so all this action is happening in R small n. Everything is in a ball of radius R, and we have these two limits. We're assuming we have this. Okay, so a little bit lengthy to read, but easy to prove and easy to use, right? Volume is continuous with respect to the Hausdorff metric, so the volume of Ck will be the limit of the volumes. And then I just take expectations. Right, the expectation of the volume of Ck will be the expectation of the limit of volumes, and I interchange the expectation and limit because everything is uniformly bounded. We have dominated convergence, so it's immediate. It's just a two-line proof of this. Okay, so the hardest thing I think about this is just to read it without passing out, but using it is easy and proving it is easy. So how do we use this? Okay, so now I'll show you a proof of the centroid body inequality using this. So how do you check convergence in the Hausdorff metric? This is the L infinity norm of the support functions of the body. So this is the Hausdorff metric written for support functions. If Tn is our random operator and we have any convex body, say symmetric, we can write down its support function. Okay, so this is just a one-line exercise. It's just the norm of the vector of inner products of the xi with y in what? The dual norm. So C polar here is the polar of C, and this is just the norm generated by this centrally symmetric convex body. Okay, and so if you have a body like an LP centroid body, it's defined in terms of its support function. We have a formula for it. For any set, we write down this support function, and then we choose a suitable set. So the obvious thing is if P and Q are dual, if I apply this to the LQ ball, so the unit ball in LQN, this is just the LP sum. Okay. Right. Okay. The LP sum of the vector of inner products of the xi's with the y. So, of course, I divide by n, send n to infinity. This looks a lot like the integral. It's just a strong law of large numbers. Right? So pointwise, for each y, I have pointwise convergence of the support function to the support function of the LP centroid body. And that's enough, right? Just pointwise convergence is enough by compactness. So here's another description of the LP centroid body. It's the almost sure limit in the Hausdorff metric of these sets. And so this is exactly in the setting of the corollary, right? We just apply these to BQN. Okay, so this, as a special case, includes that equality. And just to emphasize, the conditions on K in the corollary are the same as the conditions on K in the theorem. So we don't have to assume anything about K, right? The role of K in the previous theorem, it's just a measure space. right? So bounded measurable. And what's also missing here is the equality conditions. And for good reason, because we use some limiting argument, we lose them. Okay, so there are two things missing, but it gives you a proof, say, at least of the inequality. Okay, and so the LP centroid body inequality was recently generalized to Orlet centroid bodies, so judging by the talk of the next title, I imagine you will hear more about this in the next talk, but let me just mention this definition. So if we have a convex body normalized to have volume 1, and we consider a function, so a convex function strictly increasing such that C of 0 is 0, called an Orlitz function, we define a new body associated to K, the Orlitz centroid body, by giving it support function, and it's just the Orlitz norm of, well, Y as a functional on K, so just the smallest lambda such that this integral, C of the inner product divided by lambda, is less than 1. Okay, so then for such bodies, an analogous inequality holds. Same equality conditions. Of course, this generalizes the LP case. And so what is it in our case? Well, there's an analogous description of such bodies. So Tn is our random operator. Such bodies are the almost sure limit in the Hausdorff metric of Tn applied to a certain set. And so what is the set? You just look at the Orlitz ball in Rn. And this is just all those T for which the Orlitz norm is less than 1, and the Orlitz norm is just, well, standard thing. So for a vector T in Rn, it's the smallest lambda for which this sum of C applied to the coordinates over lambda is less than 1. Okay, so this thing, how do you prove this? It's a law of large numbers. In this case, you need, say, one extra step because, I mean, the expression for the support function is not exactly a sum, but it's the infimum of the lambda such that, and then a term involving a sum. But it's just elementary real analysis. Okay, so we got another proof of that as well. Okay, so let me say a few words about the proof. After some water. Okay, so what can we actually prove? So we can prove a more general statement. So instead of looking at compact sets or bounded Borel measurable sets, we look at functions. So suppose we have capital N positive Borel measures on Rn, absolutely continuous with respect to Lebesgue measure, corresponding densities. Okay, so we look at now a new expression. So the same volume of this random operator applied to C, but we're integrating with respect to these densities now. Okay, then the inequality we prove is a statement about rearrangement. So this script f of these densities, it decreases when I replace the f's by their symmetric decreasing rearrangements. So I'll remind you of that in a second. But yeah, of course, if the fi's are just the indicator functions of the ki, then this includes the previous case. And so f star here, well, so first we start by defining the rearrangement of a measurable set. So for any set of finite volume, A star is just the open ball with the same volume as A, so it's just this ball. And say a convenient way to define the symmetric decreasing rearrangement, say for integrable functions or for functions that vanish at infinity, is through the layer cake representation. So this is a nice compact formula for it. All right, so we're rearranging the level sets of S. And so the key properties here is that these are radially symmetric and decreasing. Okay, and so a kind of common strategy in proving such things when you have a function and their rearrangements is approximation of the symmetric decreasing rearrangement by Steiner symmetrization. Okay, and so this is also the strategy that we use. This is kind of a standard thing, for instance, in the in the well-known inequality of Brathkamp, Lieben-Luttinger, this is what's done. So this is the same thing we use. Okay, and so just in the last minute, I'll mention just the key lemma that we use. Okay, so there's a rearrangement inequality that's kind of right for us to use. We can use it exactly in this formulation. So this is in a paper by Christina Drakitsi from 2006. So take a centrally symmetric convex set in R capital N, and suppose we have integrable functions g1 up to gn. Okay, then the integral of, so this is a product of these functions, and these are real valued functions. So g is a function of the first coordinate, g1 is a function of the first coordinate, gn is a function of the nth coordinate, and we're integrating over a centrally symmetric convex set. So such an integral can only increase if you replace this with their rearrangements. Okay? So the important thing here is the type of set that you're integrating over. So it's not, say, a special case, say, of Breskamp-Lee-Bludinger, because what we're doing here is, I mean, this is a function of the first coordinate, the nth coordinate, and we're integrating over a centrally symmetric convex set. Okay, so that's the information here. Now, I put also Pfeiffer here, and so if you read Pfeiffer's paper, you won't find this statement, but in this paper, it's attributed to Pfeiffer, and she claims it's just it's just, say, a reformulation of this for measures, manipulating level sets, etc. Okay, so how do we apply this lemma? So we're applying this lemma, the GIs are what? We're going to use, so just in the last 30 seconds, we use Frobenius theorem on this expression. So first we're integrating over, say, capital N hyperplanes, and then in the orthogonal directions. And so what you should do, you should look at the densities restricted. So if we fix, we're going to symmetrize just in one direction, theta, and we suppose y1 up to yn are fixed in theta perv. So this is the Frobenius part, and then we take the GIs to be the restriction of the densities in just these directions. Okay, so this is, those are the GIs, and then what is L? We do the same thing with the function. So we restrict the function. It's a function of capital N vectors in Rn. Each one we look in one coordinate. We restrict this function. And we apply this thing to the level sets of that function. Okay, so this is a kind of, say, rearrangement there, this type of arguments, manipulating level sets. Okay, so that's the main idea in the proof. And so what's important about the function, if I can borrow an extra 10 seconds, are the type of level sets it has, and so the main point is proving that this function is convex. And this can be done in an analogous way as, say, Gromer's original argument for the convex law. So, okay. With that, I'll finish. Thanks.